thank you very much for speaking with me today. You started your career by getting a bachelor's degree in physics here at the University of Glasgow, and then you went on to get a PhD here as well in nuclear physics. And so I'm wondering, were you always interested in science, or was there something that sparked your interest? Was it in the school that you first became interested?
So I've been interested in science for as long as I can remember, and the person responsible is most likely my dad. I remember even when I was a kid, when you go through that phase where you want to ask why about everything, he would go to a huge amount of effort to answer my why questions and then give me a lot more to think about afterwards. And ever since then, you know, my curiosity has just developed.
And was your dad a scientist or an engineer, or did he work in a technical field?
No, he was actually an accountant.
And he still
interesting. But he was very interested in some aspects of science and engineering.
So when you finished your bachelor's degree, what motivated you to continue on to a PhD? Was there a certain research that you wanted to do? Was there someone you wanted to work for? Or was it just that you'd had a number of classes and you thought, I want to do more of this? Was it more general?
I think the last item there applies. I've always been curious about science, like I said, and doing a PhD was a way for me to be able to pursue my interests and follow my curiosity.
Mm-hmm. And so you did a PhD in nuclear physics here. And then after that, you moved. Mm-hmm. So you were in Austin for a while, in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
And did you go straight from your PhD to working there, or was...
No, so after I finished my PhD, I wanted to see what the private sector was like. And so I spent a couple of years working for the JP Morgan Chase Investment Bank. Mm-hmm. And that was actually a really nice experience. The people that I worked with were really, really great people, really easy to work with and get along with, and I learned a lot. My wife and I also got the opportunity to spend nearly a year in New York City, paid for by the company, which was a really pleasant experience as well.
So when you started working for them, were you working here in Glasgow?
I was.
And then they moved you to New York?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And did your wife also work for them, or she wasn't?
No, she at the time was finishing her degree in education.
Okay. And you said you learned a lot while you were there.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about what you learned? Sometimes people find it easier if we think about when you started working for JP Morgan and compare yourself to when you finished working. How are you different? What changed about the way you do things?
The main thing that I learned was how to be productive during a project, how to keep track of your work, how to complete your work. That doesn't sound quite right.
But when, that makes a lot of sense. And I think because as well, if you're doing an experiment in a lab, a lot of it, at least from my experience, was how do I get it done? How do I get these things done?
Yeah, I learned things from the perspective of management, I suppose, project management. It was a software job, and so professional software outfits tend to have procedures that are very well developed to make sure that all of the teams are productive. Some of the practices I learned while working at JP Morgan I actually use in my own research group.
That's incredible.
And I think that they're really useful to help keep my students motivated and productive.
Can you describe maybe one or two of those things?
Yeah. So one of the things that I learned at JP Morgan is this idea of agile software development. And this is a really big topic, but one of the ideas in Agile is that every single day you have a very short Scrum meeting. During this meeting, everybody, Scrum or stand-up, I guess, is what it's called. And it's called a stand-up because it's short enough so that everybody can stand up. And the idea is that everyone mentions what they did the day before, what they're going to do today, and if there's any obstacles holding them back. What it means is that every single day I get an update from my students. It's very, very short, so it's not a big time investment. I do this with from 3 to 6 students on any given day. They get very quick feedback, and so my students aren't left for days on end banging their heads against the keyboard wondering why something isn't working. Because students sometimes are reluctant to come and ask for help. That's something that I found really helps.
So when they mention these obstacles, is the goal then, do you help them with those obstacles? Can other students help each other with their obstacles?
Yeah, actually that's a a really useful aspect of doing stand-up meetings is that everybody hears what everyone else's problems are, and very often someone who isn't me will chime in and say, hey, I have a solution for this.
So you went to JP Morgan and then you went on to Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
So did you go from New York? Had you already been in New York?
No, I ended up moving back to Glasgow so that my wife could finish up her education, and then after that we decided to move to Austin, Texas.
And how did you end up in Austin? Was it the research area? Did your PhD advisor have a connection with someone working there?
The way that it worked was that I decided I wanted to get back into academia. I started looking for jobs in academia, and because we had had such a great experience in the United States, having lived in New York, we didn't exclude the US as a place to look for a position. I ended up emailing a professor that was looking for somebody with my skill set and in an area of research that I was interested in, and so I emailed him and then just took it from there.
That's great. So you managed, because a lot of times people think they need to have someone like a mentor sort of pointing them in the right direction, but you managed to find it on your own. But I imagine that moving to Texas was fairly different from being in New York. Did you find it a change? I mean, even other than the same country, but they're really quite far apart.
Yeah, it was really different, but it was just amazing. I think that the United States has something to offer everybody. The aspects of New York that we really liked were different to the aspects of Austin that we really, really liked, but all the same, we enjoyed both places. Austin has some really amazing food, and the people are incredibly friendly. My wife struggled initially in New York to make friends. I mean, eventually we did, and then she loved it after that. But in Austin, it was really easy. Her first friend, she found just by striking up a conversation at a bus stop. Before we knew it, we were all hanging out together. The place we lived in Austin was South Congress, and it's full of hippies and bohemians and musicians, and they're just incredibly interesting people. So we had a terrific time, and the fantastic weather helps as well.
Yeah, it's certainly quite different from Scotland, I would say. Your wife moved with you a number of times. Mm-hmm. When you moved up to Austin, was she working there, or was it?
No, the visa that I was on permitted me to work,
but not
if
her.
She wanted to work, she would have had to apply for a work permit, and also I think that her qualification that she earned in Scotland wasn't directly transferable to the United States. She would have had to have done additional training. At the time, we decided, well, why don't we have kids instead?
Yeah.
We had a son. She was happy to stay home and look after him. And then after that, we had a daughter and then another son. She's still at home bringing them up. What she hopes is that once they're old enough that they're all in school, she'll be able to complete the aspect of her training that she needs to fulfill, you know, the US requirements, and then go back to teaching.
I just mentioned that because often it is hard when, I think, academics move a fair amount,
mm-hmm.
and if you have a spouse or a family, people coming along with you, mm-hmm. sometimes even though your job starts up again as soon as you move, for them the transition might be, sometimes it's complicated getting everybody in a new place.
So. Yeah.
Then your postdoc lasted about 6 years, or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would say that's a long time for a postdoc,
mm-hmm.
but how would you describe that time? How was that for you?
I actually really enjoyed my time as a postdoc. It took a little bit of adjustment because I went from basic science in nuclear physics to investment banking and then to applied science and engineering, and nuclear science and engineering. I think that after a year or something, I reached a point where I was being productive, I was publishing regularly. Then after a little while, my supervisor decided to move to Colorado and asked me to come with him, and so there was a period of adjustment there as well.
So when you moved, moving a lab is often very challenging, and I guess it kind of somewhat depends on the kind of research you were doing.
Yep.
Were there big pieces of equipment that you had to move and set up again?
So thankfully the work that we've done is mostly computational.
Okay.
So the big pieces of equipment really were my desktop computer, which is pretty big for a computer. But other than that, not so much. I think that the way that my supervisor managed to figure it out was that his students from UT Austin had all graduated by the time that we were ready to move. So when we moved, it was really just me and him.
Okay. So that made it a lot easier that the students didn't have to move.
Yeah.
Because I think whenever research groups move, there is a lot of... It's generally a big challenge. So just having computers sounds really quite... quite an advantage, really. So now you're a professor in mechanical engineering at the Colorado School of Mines.
That's right.
There's a history of mining in Colorado, but I imagine the Colorado School of Mines has kind of expanded its research areas. It's not all about mining. How does the work that you do now fit into the research projects going on there, or the research areas there, would you say?
Mines has a nuclear science and engineering program. It's not a very old program. It goes back to, I believe, 2007, I want to say. The work that we do there ranges from metallurgy and materials to nuclear forensics, post-detonation forensics, and radiochemistry. There's also a large computational aspect of the work that we do. And so since I'm very computationally focused, I think that my work dovetails well with what's going on at Mines, Nuclear Science and Engineering.
You said you transitioned from doing basic research to doing applied research.
Yeah.
And it seems like you've also, I mean, I don't know if this was a noticeable transition, but you've gone from doing, from being in a physics department to being in an engineering department.
Yeah.
And it seems that when you are teaching, some of the courses that you've taught, you've co-taught with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that helped you make this transition into engineering? Or would that make it a little bit easier? Or do you find it awkward teaching in engineering when your background's in physics, or not at all awkward, would you say?
It made it a lot easier. And I'm lucky in that my co-instructor was also my postdoc supervisor, and he also has a background in physics. The transition, while it was a challenge, I think that it could have been a lot worse. He really helped me out a lot.
Yeah. So you were doing research and teaching, and you have a family.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine this is kind of a lot of demands on your time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain interest and curiosity in your subject, despite all this potentially stressful working environment, stressful home, possibly with kids being stressful? How do you keep the balance and keep yourself interested in what you're doing?
Well, I think time management is the most difficult aspect of being tenure-track faculty. Keeping interest, it's never really been an issue for me. I've always found this really, really interesting. And I find myself, actually, when I'm at home, I have to be the responsible dad. I have to take my mind off of work and give my kids the attention that they need and deserve.
Okay.
So for me, this isn't really an issue. I don't know to what extent that's an issue for other academics, but my suspicion is that most of them probably feel similar.
So you don't find, sometimes people, if they're working on a research topic for a long time,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they just want to walk away from it. Do you have days like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's a project I've been working on for, let's see, since late 2013. And every time I feel like we've made some progress, the field kind of opens up again, or the ground falls out from under me. And it's very, very interesting, and it's again one of the real challenges of being in academia and being a professor is, and it's something that you really have to embrace, is this idea that you will fail most of the time. 90% of the ideas you try, at least, or the approaches you take, are not going to be the right way to do it. But you stay in it for that 10% or less of the time when you actually manage to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that when I started my PhD, or when I started doing experimental work, I remember I spent all this time trying to plan my experiments so that they would go perfectly.
Yeah.
And I did spend all this time planning, and I did the experiment, and it was a disaster. And I thought, how is that possible? I worked so hard. And then I realized, no, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's you had to take that next step to learn that it wasn't a mistake to do those experiments.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to take that step to learn through them.
Yeah.
So how do you, in terms of your time at work, is half your time spent on teaching and half on research? Or kind of how is that, what's the distribution, would you say, of where you spend your time? And do you spend your time in lab? Do you spend your time talking to students? I'm imagining you're applying for grants and things as
mm-hmm.
well, and writing papers.
I spend a great deal of time advising students and a lot of time teaching as well, and teaching related duties like preparing lectures, grading homework assignments, and developing projects and stuff like this. During the semester, it's hard to say exactly what the fractions are, but when I think about how I spend most of my time, yeah, it's helping out students and postdocs and teaching. But yeah, it's also important to spend time developing your own research ideas and coming up with formulations and approaches for students to take. and chasing after money as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that's important.
And what would you say is the most challenging part of your work right now?
I think I said it before, it's time management. That's the hardest thing. Yes, keeping all these plates spinning, because everything needs a bit of attention. You know, students need a lot of attention, your teaching duties need a lot of attention. And you really have to carve out that time for yourself to work on the things that you're interested in.
Now that you live in Colorado, how do you find it living so far from where you started? I don't want to say you live far from home, because I'm sure that feels like home now.
Yeah.
But it is far from where you began. Do you find it hard to stay in touch with your friends and family here in Scotland? And do you find it in any way odd that you're raising children in such a different place than where you grew up?
I am used to moving around a lot. I actually moved around when I was a kid. So I was actually born in Brazil.
Oh, wow, I didn't
and did I put that in my CV?
No, I didn't see that. No, I assume because you did your bachelor's and your PhD in Glasgow, I just assumed you were from Glasgow.
So I was in Brazil till I was about 4 years old, I want to say, and then we moved to the south of England, and then we were there for a year, moved back to Brazil for another couple of years, and then we moved to Scotland. During my time in Scotland, I went and worked in Germany, back to Scotland, so I'm kind of used to moving around. It's not a huge deal for me, but now that I have kids, I'm more inclined to stay in the same place. Staying in touch with family and friends is tough. Social media helps, and Facebook really helps, especially when it comes to talking to family, and it's good to be able to share photos of the kids and whatnot.
So you find ways to keep up with them, even though it's not face-to-face?
Yeah, we do. And it also helps that my parents come to visit every year. My wife's mother comes to visit about once a year as well. We try to have visitors as often as possible.
So you're currently visiting as a distinguished visitor here in Glasgow. So you still have some connections with the University of Glasgow. Is this the same group where you did your PhD, or have you made other connections since you've moved away?
At Glasgow, I still have a connection with my former supervisor. This time, you know, during my visit, I'm trying to reach out and make connections with people a little bit further afield. There's somebody in Particle Physics Group that I'm establishing a connection with, and there's also people at Edinburgh University that I'm in contact with to broaden out my connections.
Reflecting back, what do you like most about working in science or engineering? I've put those together.
I really like that it's never boring. I really like that I'm naturally curious about these things. Every single day it feels like I have the opportunity to learn something new and apply what I've learned to answering questions that I'm curious about. That's the best thing. It never ever feels like a routine 9-to-5, you know, day in, day out kind of situation.
And so you said it never feels like a routine 9-to-5, but I just have a question about that. Do you work 9-to-5, or do you work longer hours? Do you bring things home, and after your kids go to bed, you can read for an hour?
I do work longer than 9-to-5, and almost every single tenure-track professor
will be doing that.
So I try to actually work from home a couple of days a week, and when I do that, it's pretty good because I can get up at 10-to-7 and very quickly start working, and I can work straight through till 6 p.m. or beyond, and then do my dad duties, and then once the kids are in bed, I can get a little bit more work done as well. And then during times when there's a deadline approaching, then usually there's a lot of weekend work involved as well.
So the deadlines for you are things like if you have a proposal that you're submitting, and maybe if there's a conference that you're getting ready for.
That's it, yeah. Proposals and conference papers are usually the major deadlines. But there's also things like if you're scheduled to give a talk somewhere else, you have to put in the work to make sure that your talk is, that you're completely prepared for your talk.
Yeah, and how much travel do you do? Is it maybe once a month that you're giving a talk away someplace, or?
Maybe once a month is about right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's more frequent.
Yeah, there are sort of... There are seasons, aren't there, where suddenly there's a bunch and then they're maybe quiet for a while.
Yeah, that's right. So this year, let's see, so far I've been to Washington, D.C., I've been to Berkeley, California, I've been over here to Scotland, I've been to Minneapolis, I've been to Salt Lake City, and then after the summer I'm going to go to Seattle, and I think there's somewhere else I'm going to go to. And that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I think if I look back at my calendar, there's going to be more.
Yeah. based on your experiences, do you have any advice that you would give to someone who is considering their next career move? So maybe they're finishing their bachelor's degree or their PhD or their postdoc, and they're thinking about what to do next.
Yeah, so I mean, what's worked for me might be different to what's going to work for people, students graduating in 2019.
Yeah.
Because the world's changing very, very quickly. What has worked for me is, I'm also, you know, I've always been very interested in computation, and it's one of those skills that is really broadly applicable. My advice would be to find something that you're interested in and that is very broadly applicable and that you can use to further your own interests in the fields that you're more specifically interested in. For example, as for myself, I apply my interest in computing and doing computational research. And the reason I say that is because I think that as a graduate, you have to keep your options open to a certain extent. Things don't always pan out the way that you think they're going to. Achieving a tenure-track appointment is very difficult. It's a big challenge. In case it doesn't pan out the way that you expect, you want to have some skills that will let you do something interesting.
Yeah, so if you look back to when you were doing your PhD, it was in nuclear physics,
and
you did a lot of computational work.
Yeah.
Would you say from the skills that you developed while you're doing your PhD, there's the knowledge about nuclear physics and there's also doing computational type projects.
Yeah.
The research that you're doing now, would you say that there's a large overlap with that topic-wise?
Yeah, I would say that it draws from both, because a lot of the basic science that is fundamental to doing nuclear engineering is neutron interactions with nuclei. And so understanding how things like cross-sections and resonances work, you know, the theoretical background for that is really, really helpful, for sure. The computational part is helpful when you're trying to be productive, applying that knowledge to generate research, for sure.
Okay. And in your current work, so my last question, so
you're almost done.
In your current work, is there something that you're particularly excited about, or do you have a goal that you're looking forward to?
Well, this might sound a bit generic, but I hope that my work will eventually have a meaningful impact on improving people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's something that every academic hopes for.
And in what way do you feel it might impact on, like, improving people's lives is a bit of a, it is a general statement.
Mm-hmm.
And in what area, how do you think, is that too specific to ask? How would it improve, potentially?
Well, I if you look at the number of people in the world who are living without electricity, you're looking at about 1.7 billion people.
Yeah.
And since a lot of my research is geared towards making energy cheaper and safer and more efficient, I think I can make a case that if I'm successful, hopefully I can, move the research forward and at least make a meaningful contribution in helping reduce that number from 1.7 billion to
so making it possible for more people. Yeah, so making it possible for more people to have access to energy.
Yeah,
and potentially also making it for those who do already have access, making it efficient, more efficient.
Yeah, efficient and cleaner.
Yeah.
I would like to see a future where we are generating electricity sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can make a meaningful contribution, then I'm happy.
So can you explain a little bit, it was my last question, a little bit about your research now in terms of generating electricity renewably?
So nuclear reactors are not traditionally seen as a renewable energy resource, but they are a clean energy resource in the sense that they don't produce greenhouse gases, they don't produce carbon dioxide the way that fossil fuels do. And it's actually something that few people know, is that nuclear reactors actually produce fewer greenhouse gases on a per unit of energy generated basis than solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
They're even cleaner than solar energy. But, you know, there are significant issues surrounding the use of nuclear energy, particularly the proliferation of nuclear weapons. And there's the waste issue to think about as well. Because nuclear is this dual-use technology, you have to be very, very careful about where and how you deploy it. My research aims to address some of these issues.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much for speaking with me.
Thanks for interviewing me. It's a pleasure.